This podcast is powered by Shockingly Different Leadership, the go-to firm companies trust when needing to up-level their leadership development, improve their HR operations, realign their workforce infrastructures, and increase their capacity to handle business-critical people initiatives. Check out our world-class experts at shockinglydifferent.com and see why SDL should be your number one ally to help your HR, learning, and talent functions become future-ready today.
Being in business for yourself is like building a plane while you're flying it. And you get to that point where you've got altitude and you've been doing everything. And now you need to, you recognize that what got you here is not going to get you where you really need to go or want to go.
Blended workforces are one of the hottest talent strategies today, where employers are using a mix of traditional employees with external resources like independent contractors, coaches, consultants, vendors, and technology solutions, all in order to enhance competitiveness, ensure cost flexibility, and expedite business goals. But how are the successful companies infusing blended workforces into their business strategy? And what are the critical success factors and pitfalls to avoid during implementation? And on the flip side, what does it really take for suppliers to improve their chances of finding and landing contract opportunities? The devil is in the details, my friends. I'm your host, Karen Farrell Rhodes, and it's time to get smarter about blended workforces at work. Hello, my dear superstars. This is Karen, and welcome to another episode of the Blended Workforces at Work podcast. I am just super thrilled to have today a dynamo of a guest, and as you will soon see, we have on today's show Ms. Catherine Fitzgerald, who is the founder of Brass Tacks with Heart Business Advising. It is a firm which specializes in guiding heart-centered founders and CEOs of successful companies that are experiencing high growth through the challenges of scaling their businesses. And you now know that we're all about really helping to understand deeper, more about blended workforces and how they're used to help businesses scale. So if I'm sure Catherine has a ton of fantastic thoughts and ideas and perspectives for us, and that is why I am so honored that she accepted our invitation to be on the show. So welcome to the show, Catherine.
Oh, Karen, thank you so much. I am so grateful that our lives intersected and this opportunity came to be, because it's been a delight to get to know you and to understand more about the podcast. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. And so those of you who listen to us, you know I'm a chatterbox, and I had a chance to meet with Catherine ahead of this episode, and I truly feel like she's a sister from another mother. We connected on so many levels, as you'll soon see. So
likewise.
Catherine, before we get started, we always love to learn a little bit about our guests. So for as much as you feel comfortable, can you share just a sneak peek about your life outside of the world of work?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I am the proud mama of three grown sons who I, you know, lovingly say are off the dole. They're all employed.
Yeah.
And you know what? I miss them terribly. I miss those years of active mothering, but I am so, so proud. And my primary responsibility these days is caring for my 87-year-old mom, who is living in an assisted living, but formerly was with me for a few years. And my joy in my life is my other half, Lee Parker, and I have great adventures together. He is an adventure seeker, so I do a lot more extreme things than I ever thought I would be doing at my age, like snowmobiling and electric mountain biking and all kinds of stuff. So he keeps me young.
What we do for love.
That's right. That's right. But you know what? You get to the top of an 11,000-foot mountain by, you know, on a snowmobile and look around, and it's just breathtaking.
Huh?
And there is no camera that will ever capture that feeling. And I always feel like I want my whole tribe here. I want everybody to see this. It's so amazing. And then you realize, well, that's probably not ever going to happen. So picture's going to have to do. But yeah,
that is amazing. Well, wonderful. Well, thanks so much for sharing.
Well, that
sounds
you.
And he sounds fantastic.
So. He is a good guy. He's a keeper. He always says
keeper.
That to me.
Sounds
I'm keeping
like
you.
It.
I also love to cook. Right. That's probably why he's keeping me.
Oh, I do too. I think that's why my husband keeps me. I love to cook and sports. And when we were dating, my husband said, it was hard to find that, all that wrapped up in one lady, and you hit it. So.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Catherine, let's start out by helping our audience understand a little bit more about what Brass Tacks with Heart really does. Because we want to make sure we express the value that you all are providing to so many great companies in the world of work.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. It's my pleasure. You know, it was born out of my heart for sure. And mostly in my passion to be in a position to help people because of my experience as an emerging leader and an executive that was selected because I was really good at my job and not necessarily because I was really great with people.
I can't imagine that, but okay.
And well, you know, I was in my 20s and it was a whole new world. And my interpretation of my first promotion from customer service rep to regional sales manager in one jump in 18 months was an eye-opening experience. And, you know, I look back on it now and kind of, I probably didn't do that as well as I could have. But, you know, space and grace, as they say, I learned a lot. And so I have a real heart for people who are building a business, especially. That particular job I did for 9 years, and it was its own profit center. And so it was, I had to buy every stick of furniture and I paid the rent and everybody's expenses, et cetera. And so it was like being in business for myself. And it was an incredible learning curve and learning opportunity. And then I had several other opportunities of leadership, including CEOs and position of CEO, executive director, and vice president at a bank, a regional bank. And so I, in all of those roles, I was always an overachiever, but also had people. And I recognized that there was a big gap in my education as, you know, I graduated from UCLA, but I was an English major. And so everybody in the world says to me, oh, are you going to be a teacher? Are you going to be a teacher? I'm like, no, not really. No. You know, that's not really my thing. But, you know, in some ways I am teaching and sharing in my role, but my goal in life in terms of where I ended up, I was in insurance, I was in banking, I was in, you know, lots of financial areas. And I recognized there was a huge gap in our education system regarding financial literacy. So when I started to work in the coaching arena, I was trained on a program that is open book management, where they, you know, teach everybody in the company how the money flows through the business and as a way to empower them to make winning decisions. And I think that's a beautiful model. And I think it's a great program. It didn't work out well for me because it was very systematic. And that is not utilizing really what I bring to the table in terms of my business advising and coaching, coach sulting, as I call it, because it's kind of a hybrid. And so really Brass Tacks became an opportunity for me to connect with people who are living that entrepreneurial dream, building their businesses, getting them to a certain point where the plane is in the air. And I loved, you know, that you and I both share that, you know, being in business for yourself is like building a plane while you're flying it. And you get to that point where you've got altitude, and you've been doing everything. And now you need to, you recognize that what got you here is not going to get you where you really need to go or want to go. And so in that process, you have to bring on a team that's capable and empower them to lead from their position. And creating that whole process is quite staggering. And if you haven't done it before, it can be really, you know, scary. And so that's really where I focus. I try to help founders and CEOs who are growing their businesses to get through those stressful moments where every decision could be a make or break, and then get them to the point where they are living the life that is really fueling their dreams and not draining them.
And as you're coach sulting them, yes. I think I got that right. I love yeah. that. It's a mix of coaching and consulting,
yes.
Which you're right, especially at that level for CEOs and founders of businesses, they need a little bit of both sometimes to kind of break through to better handle the challenges that they're facing. Specifically as it relates to scaling, how do you help them think about that new mindset? Because there is one mindset when, as you know, when you're launching and solidifying your business and the expertise and the products and services you're bringing to the world. But once you're established and you're moving into higher growth and needing to scale, how do you help them prepare or think through this whole new arena? Because many of them may not have had that kind of experience in the past.
Well, there's several, you know, areas that are impacted when you're going to scale your business. And so we start to really look at those areas. And I have a, you know, a basic framework that we go through and look at the, you know, the financial aspect, the people aspect, the systems, the processes, the operations. What I found is a lot of entrepreneurs are successful because they have a dream and they have a drive, and they're going to get to that dream. Sometimes the details of the mechanisms within the business are not really fleshed out all the way, and they've gotten to this level of success. And in order to go to the next one, they have to really change the way they do business because there's liability built into not doing it. And so we work with, you know, all aspects of the growth and figure out what order makes sense to make those changes and create goals around, you know, what they want to see and by when. And then we pick maybe the top two or three things, and we go through those together. And then, you know, at the end of that, then we'll pick the next three things and kind of move along. So it's a long process, and it's not a quick fix, but the transformation goal is very clear. And that is that they are going to get to the point where all the structure is there, and they're not, as I like to say, drinking from a fire hose every day.
Right.
And they're able to enjoy the benefits of building this business, as well as, you know, to watch others flourish and grow as well. And that's where the heart part comes in for me. As I, you know, when I work with someone, I want to know that their heart is not just about the money or not just about their own success, but really looking at their company and the people that have helped them build that business and recognizing that is a team and they value them. And when you meet someone like that, you just know it, and it works so beautifully.
You're so right. Let's drill down into maybe the people and operations side of some of the businesses. I think that gets close to our topic of the podcast. And so my question with you, let me ask you, in your opinion, what can be the power of implementing blended workforces into a business? And what are one or two challenges that can make them hard to implement?
Okay, those are great questions. I'm gonna back up just a little bit and say that when we do the financial analysis of the business, and when I say financial analysis, it's like looking at what are your direct costs and what are your indirect costs, and where is your profit margin, and where do you need it to be sustainable and to be in high growth, what do we need? And so in looking at that, you know, the people equation comes in right front and center. And so we start to look at what makes sense from a growth strategy as far as blended workforces go, and where we need growth. Where are the weakest links? Where are the areas that need to be shored up? And what is the solution? So it may be to outsource your financials. It may not be. It may be about, you know, leadership and, or getting a fractional HR person, or, you know, we kind of look and identify where those roles can be blended in. So then to address the second part of your question in terms of what is the danger in that? or where is the, and of course, I'm going to share my age here, because when I say that, I think immediately of the robot in Lost in Space. Danger, danger.
Yeah.
And half our audience won't know what that is. So Google it.
I do, yeah.
So I think that we're about, you know, running out in front of the business a little bit and seeing where those pitfalls are. And I think my experience and also the fact that I've been in business myself, I can feel those internal growing pains and kind of address those from that standpoint. But then we look at what is the culture? One of the things that I loved a quote, and I have no idea who said this, but I thought it was brilliant. And that is that if you are not proactive in developing your culture, you become a victim of your culture.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
And I think that analyzing the team culture, looking at it, really seeing, you know, the mindset of the team and recognizing that incorporating them in the process of scaling and understanding that their ability to look at things from where they sit has value. And if we can't harness that wisdom, then we're kind of starting with less than the intelligent data that we need to make good decisions as we grow. And so bringing that team together, being purposeful about the culture, and then making sure that whoever you hire has a values match, and whether that's a fractional person or an employee, because value systems drive the actions that the team takes and where they, what they do in the moment. And you can teach anybody a skill or a technical way of doing things, a process, but you can't teach values. So when you hire for values, you have a much greater ability to predict a positive outcome.
So let me tell you what I love about that is I'm a voracious reader, and I have I read a ton of, research reports and articles, all on the topic, because I try to curate some of the best data out there. And one of the many research studies I read, I can't remember if it's like Gartner or something like that, but excuse me, I don't know this. I have the source top of mind. But you're spot on. One of the biggest roadblocks for blended workforces to work successfully is around the cultures and values piece. And in particularly around culture, a lot of companies don't do a great job in preparing their traditional staff with the incoming of external talent coming in to work with them. And they also don't sometimes do a good job in onboarding external talent and staff onboarding them in a way that culture is emphasized, so they have insights on how to best work together with the traditional teams that are in place. And I'm just curious if you agree, poke hole that article, because they said, that is one of, because people have their own concerns, employees have their own concerns about outside individuals coming in. Not that they think they're going to get take their jobs, but if things are humming along well, they're afraid that the outside individual coming in might rot the boat in a way that creates conflict and lessens harmony within the teams. And then that's another challenge for leaders having to work through it. So I'd love your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm 100%. Yeah, I am 100% in agreement with that. And I think you have to be really strategic. And that's part of that, harnessing the wisdom of the crowd or the team ahead of time is to invite them into what is happening, so they feel an ownership about rolling out the red carpet for, the welcome mat for the new people that are joining the team to help us get where we need to go. There cannot be vagaries between the leadership and the team before this outside person or team comes in, because people, we do that. We make up stories about, what we don't know and why. And if we don't communicate clearly and develop that, ownership mindset that this is our house and we are a team, and how are we going to welcome these people that are coming in to help us? If we don't have that mindset as we bring in outside people, we're setting up a situation where you're going to have conflict. And I experienced that very clearly when the bank that I work for hired a Six Sigma expert to come in as a consultant. And there was a lot of, you know, ruffled feathers.
I bet.
And, you know, the process was well intended and the outcome was positive, but people have their turf wars, and the only way that you can alleviate that is to be open and to have a conversation that is respectful, that this is going to be change. And who signs up for change? I mean, there are very few people that go, oh yeah, bring that change on. I'll take it every day. You know,
right.
We like predictability and, you know, and security. And so in those situations where you have a team, it's just prudent to be out in front of that and have those conversations.
It makes a ton of sense. And because you are an individual who's had their toe in both sides of the ocean, if you will, having been in the workforce yourself and then starting your own firm, I'm going to lean on you on the firm side. How have you successfully been able to make the transition from a more formalized spin in corporate, if you will, to the transition to the mindset of, you know, leading your own firm and being a vendor in your own right? And how do you position yourself, or what have you done to try to position yourself as the top option to select for founders and CEOs who are looking for a coach and a confidant to help them with their scaling of growth?
Well, to be honest with you, I lead with my heart and my gut. And I think that when I meet my person, they know it and I know it. You know, it's a feeling. Yeah. And, you know, my biggest thing is, from the very beginning of my career, and actually probably from my years in Girl Scouts selling cookies, I have been in sales my whole life. And the one thing that I have always focused on is relationship sales. I don't want to sell anybody anything they don't need or want. So it's always about a mutual, you know, decision to work together. It's never me. I'm not going to arm twist anybody, which is probably, you know, my nemesis in that I really probably go overboard in not, you know. I jokingly say I want to be the bat phone for my clients, and I want to be the best kept secret that they share among their friends, because good people know good people. And so when I talk to a client, you know, we talk about what their dreams are and what their struggles are. And we get down to, you know, real connection. And to me, that's what life is about. You can make all the money in the world. You can travel all over the place. But it is the people that bring the joy and the substance and the value in your life. And meeting people and connecting and sharing stories is how I do that. And when someone is my client, my relationship with them is about making their dreams become reality. And that's how I work, you know, the whole time.
Who doesn't want that, right?
Exactly. And, it's like I brainstorm with them, helping them to figure out, okay, what is, you know, what angle have we missed at looking at this problem? And then once they settle on where they want to go and what the strategy is going to be, then I pull in any connection I have that can help them get there. Because it's not about, you know, being their best friend. It's about being a change agent that actually helps them to get where they want to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What was the hardest thing you had to tackle when you founded your firm?
Taking my own advice.
Isn't that always the case?
Oh my goodness. There's such joy in helping people for me. And yet, you know, when I look at my own business and really treat my business like a business, that's a humbling experience sometimes, you know, to realize that, you ought to probably look at your business the way you tell your clients to look at their business.
That's right. It's just hard to take our own medicine sometimes.
Oh, it is. It is. But I think the biggest part for me is the vulnerability of putting myself out there as someone who wants to walk beside someone and take their dreams and their, you know, hard blood, sweat, equity and help shape it into what they want, and to say that I will do my best. And, you know, I'm human, but I'm taking a certification right now that's talking about your internal voice, the judge that's telling you. I am definitely somebody who has that little voice that I have to shush every now and then and say, no, you know, you have, I hate to say this out loud, 40 years of experience in leadership,
no,
you know?
That's not positive. Yeah.
And you need to share it. And that's the foundation of it.
And the reason I ask this, because I do this, you know, same thing. Our area of focus, SDL, is really helping the people side of business. So, you know, really helping with people strategy, change management, organizational effectiveness, things like that. And in that level, most of our primary decision makers are your C-suite. They're either the chief human resources officers or head of people directly, or they're business leaders that are pretty high up that have a whole division or, you know, a whole area of themselves. And the people side is so, they really protect that. They don't want just anyone in there partnering with them. They didn't want to pick somebody off of LinkedIn, right? They want someone that they know, like, and trust that will come in. And I always say the people side of business is kind of a little bit dirty, if you will, meaning that if you open the hood, you'll see that there's a little bit of dysfunction, not as clean, a little bit messier than you might have seen from the outside looking in, but their hearts are in the right place and they want to get things corrected or adjusted or improved. And so that know, like, trust factor is, you know, really important with them. It sounds like you do the same thing and trying to rely on relationships, helping them get to know you and helping them to understand that you're there to support them in the direction that they're wanting to go.
Well, and I think the financial literacy piece is one of those things that can be intimidating. And I always start with, you know, we're looking at profitability in this company, and your accountant is looking at making sure the taxes are paid properly.
Yes.
And so we're going to break things down in a different way than maybe you're used to looking at them. And many times I have had conversations where people have said, yeah, I don't understand that. That's why I gave it to an accountant, you know? And I said,
you got to know this stuff.
I totally get that because I was an English major and this was Greek to me too. And if I can do it, you can do it, you know? And it's not about being an accountant. It's about understanding where your pricing needs to be. And if you're guessing at where your pricing needs to be, then your gut is going to be churning.
Yeah.
And so how do we get the gut, you know, under control? Well, we dig in and get to the numbers. And so looking at different financial streams, revenue streams in a business is also diversification, you know, looking at the ability to pivot when you need to, and looking at the economy and where you're at and what your business, how it could be impacted, you know, so looking out into the future. And I think that as you do that with people, I do that with the financials. And then the other thing that as far as being an outside consultant coming in, I think there's things that you can say as the outside person that the founder can't say. It's just the ears hear it differently when the boss says it. When you're the outside person, you're kind of a non-threat, you know? And so that's a wonderful place to be. And I think that's why I gravitate to what, brass tacks with heart, because I see it on both sides.
I love that. I love that. Well, one of the questions we always love to ask our guests is we love to ask you to pick one of the leadership tactics that I write in my book, Lead at the Top of Your Game. And it's all of, you know, everybody we talk to is generally in some way, shape, or form in the world of work. And all of the 7 tactics are as equally as important. But we're always curious to see which one kind of stood out for you. And so you were so kind enough to share that leading with entrepreneurship kind of piqued your ears a bit. And listening to our discussion, I kind of see why. But for our new listeners out there, leading with entrepreneurship is all about, you know, building an organization by identifying new opportunities to improve or develop new products, services, or operations or processes. So we're just curious. Curious minds want to know, Catherine, why did that one intrigue you?
Well, the very personal answer is that I am the person that asks why every time.
Love it.
And so it's always in an effort to improve or to look at how we can optimize or best spend this energy. And that goes personally and professionally, and it can rub both ways, good and bad.
Yes.
But I think that when we have an employer who has the mindset that his team brings value, or her team, and that if we incorporate their perspective, we have gained in our data points to make good decisions. But also when you activate the team to understand what a winning decision is. And when I say what a winning decision is, I'm talking about what is a financially winning decision for the company, because I know that when the company is secure, I am secure.
Right.
Then you invite co-creation and you have perspective that, you know, when I have a job description, I'm an employee, I look at my desk and my deliverables at my desk. When I'm the founder CEO, I'm looking at the landscape 24/7. Right. And I don't necessarily have the ability to sit at that desk and really understand what the daily operations are of that desk any more than that employee understands what it's like to go to bed every night knowing that you have 50 employees and you got to make payroll next Friday, you know? And so that gap of a perspective has incredible richness and value to both sides. So how do we create that conversation, and what do we do it around? Well, the best instrument from my perspective is to create awareness and financial literacy. It doesn't mean opening your books, doesn't mean, you know, sharing the balance in your checkbook. It means helping employees understand what costs are directly related to what they do and to what the product they turn out, produce, and understand what profitability is, and then how to make those decisions as positive in terms of cash flow and expenses as possible, but also inviting them to co-create solutions that are better. So when you get that energy going and that feedback loop that is an open communication, that feeds intrapreneurship, because now I have been empowered to think about what is best, not to just go, okay, I'll do this. And when you can tap into people's energy like that, then they get passionate and take ownership. And when that happens, then your team is unstoppable.
That's right. Their engagement just skyrockets.
Exactly.
Oh, Catherine, I could talk to you forever, but I'm so sorry. That's all the time we have for today. Darn it.
Yes.
Well, I do want to thank you so much for the gift of your time and joining me and the audience. We absolutely loved your perspectives. And boy, I was just feverishly taking notes. So thank you. It has been such a great conversation.
I so enjoyed it, Karen. You are very special. And I am so grateful that we met.
Same here.
Yeah.
And thank you very much, listeners, for joining another episode of the Blended Workforces at Work podcast. We truly appreciate the gift of time you have given as well. Please make sure that you like and subscribe to the podcast and share with just one friend, because by doing so, all of us together can get smarter about blended workforces at work. Thanks again, and see you next week. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you again for listening to the Blended Workforces at Work podcast. You can check out the show notes, additional episodes, bonus resources, and also submit guest recommendations on our website at blendedworkforcesatwork.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, or YouTube by searching for the name Karen Rhodes, with Karen being spelled K-A-R-A-N. And if you like the show, the greatest gift you can give would be to subscribe and leave a rating on your favorite podcast platform of choice. This podcast has been a production of Shockingly Different Leadership, a global consultancy which helps organizations execute their people, talent development, and organizational effectiveness initiatives on an on-demand, contract, fractional, or project basis. Huge thanks to the SDL production and editing team for a job well done. Bye for now.